Hi, everyone, and welcome to Soft Spot, episode number 4. We've been starting to get a lot of positive feedback from listeners, which is really exciting. So thank you to all of you who are listening, and we're open to all of your feedback. Today's topic is more focused toward our active duty audience because we're talking about a DoD program called SkillBridge. Our guests today are two retired Navy commanders, Charles Chuck New and Stephen Steve Jones. These two both did a SkillBridge fellowship with the GSF, so they have firsthand experience of the program and its benefits for veterans who are preparing for their transition from active duty. So listen on to learn more about some SkillBridge, and don't forget to subscribe to SoftSpot.
And then if we want to break it down...
Global Soft Foundation.
My immediate reaction was,
this
is awesome.
This idea.
The Special Operations
Special
Community.
Association for Special Operations.
You have our support. Let's move.
Welcome to Soft Spot. Hello, everyone. I'm sitting here today with Steve Jones, our Director of Partner Relations, and Chuck New, which, what is your new title?
I am the Southeast Account Manager for a company based out of Albuquerque called Improve Group.
Excellent. Sorry, I had to reprimand Chuck for touching his microphone and making noises. And he's the one who's done two podcasts before, so...
True.
You should know better.
Rookie mistake as a veteran. Very embarrassing.
Rush Limbaugh's equipment's better than yours, so it doesn't make any... It edits it right out.
What?
So it begins.
I can't believe our Amazon purchases aren't as good as Rush Limbaugh's equipment. Anyway, now that the name dropping is done, we're going to talk about a little thing called SkillBridge today. It's a very little known but valuable program that's actually put on by the DoD. It's not affiliated with the GSF technically, but we've used it 2 times so far for interns or fellows, whichever term you prefer. So since we like it, we're trying to spread the word about it. And I'm sitting here today with two people who have been SkillBridge interns, fellows. I know, Chuck, you like fellows. We'll go with fellows. Fellows sounds cooler. So first, we're going to talk to our first fellow, Steve. So Steve, if you could let us know, how did you even learn about SkillBridge?
Well, I was sitting in, this was probably about 2016, and I was sitting through our Transition Assistance Program class, TAP. And around that time, there was some things that I was weighing in terms of, like, do I go to school? Do I get a job? Am I going to move? What do I need to do? And, you know, people have various opinions about TAP programs, and I'm sure every TAP program is different based on what base and who provides the training. But in my particular instance, DoD SkillBridge was just a bullet point on a slide. That was about it. It was something that the Fleet and Family Service Center had never done. But yet it was still advertised on the slide. So I went, did some research, did some digging around, see, what the possibility was. And then at the same time, I was talking with Stu Braid and the CEO of GSF, and I was like, hey, there's this thing I think that we can do where I can come help out, prior to my terminal leave date. And he said, go for it, try it, and see if we can make it work. And then we did. I'm sure it's probably on every TAP brief all over the country, but it was just a bullet point. It just took me to dig
a
little deeper.
What made that bullet point stand out to you?
Because it said internships. So prior to me joining the Navy, I did internships every summer during college, and it's something that I believe in because you get to not only learn what you want to do, but you, more importantly, get to learn what you don't want to do. And so I saw something, wow, I could do almost like free space internship. I was like, I need to get into this because that's a great way to get your foot in a door is an internship, which I think is probably the best way to get the best job is through an internship.
Chuck, do you remember them talking about it in your TAP program?
I probably saw the same slide, exactly the same slide as Steve did. And but by that time, I had already talked to Stu. I believe I had already mentioned it to Stu about it, if I remember correctly. I remember calling Stu and saying, hey, my last 60 days of terminal leave, on my 60 days of terminal leave, could I come work for GSF? And Stu said, yes, you could do 60 days. He said, but you can also do 180 days and call Steve. As a matter of fact, now I remember how the order. So that was the first thing. And then when I went to the TAP class, I saw it, but I had already made the arrangements with Steve. I was already getting ready to make that all happen. I had, you know, basically just was in the process of making it happen when I went to TAP class. So,
so you said 180 days. Like, what are, what is the criteria to be in the TAP or in the SkillBridge program?
So the maximum amount of time you could do it is the one is 180 days. So I, you know, I structured it so that was my last 180 days. So I basically just went to an internet calendar, said, hey, count me back 180 days from October 1st. I think that date was March 3rd, and that's what I attached to the request sheet with the instructions, the DOD instruction and the NAV admin instruction, and sent it to the chain of command. As Steve had, same for Steve, no one had knew what it was, how it worked, or in my chain of command, it was brand new. But they were supportive of it. You know, we read through it together, and I kind of explained to them that there wasn't a, you know, a program office, for lack of a better term, in Tampa that ran this, that centrally managed these opportunities, and but that the instruction, you know, clearly said that any opportunity was viable as long as it met the ethical requirements and the chain of command approved.
So, so it says, you know, the basic guidelines are, you know, up to 180 days and, you know, a non-paid internship. And for the employer, it's supposed to be at little or no cost. But, you know, since Chuck and I are both Navy, there's a specific Navy instruction that governs us. So I would just say if you're a member of a different service, to make sure you find the instruction, because there may be, like, little minute differences. I don't think so. But just to make sure, once I found the individual instruction, I actually called the program manager in Millington, which is the 1-800 number at the bottom of the instruction, and I talked to them directly, and they said, what do I need to do? Who tracks this? And how do I get involved? Especially since I was not, like, in San Diego or Norfolk. I wasn't in a fleet concentration area. So your internship is what you make it to be. You know what I mean?
So as a non-military person, I just want to clarify a couple of things. So when you say instruction, that's from the Navy or from SkillBridge?
So, yeah, so the instruction is essentially, it's, they call it a NAV admin or Naval Administrative instruction. So instruction is like the guiding document that is that details the program and who's in charge and how it works. So I guess it's like the you know, like an instruction manual for, you know, like,
but, like,
IKEA.
Does every service have one for SkillBridge?
Because, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming because the Navy has mm-hmm. their NAV admin. And if you go on the website, you can see, like, they have, like, Navy, Army, Air Force, mm-hmm. and you mm-hmm. click.
The SkillBridge website.
The SkillBridge mm-hmm. website.
www.skillbridge.com.
No, it's www.dodskillbridge.com.
Yeah.
But there is a MAR admin for the Marines, there's a AFI, Air Force instruction. And but the overarching one is the DOD SkillBridge instruction. But all the data, all the information is on the website.
Yeah. But you were both, like, the first people in your chains of command to do this, right? Like, it's that little known?
Yeah, I was the first one in the entire, like, the
world.
Well, I'm just probably Mars, probably at least Mars or maybe Venus. But I know in the Charleston, South Carolina, the Naval Weapons Station and Joint Base Charleston, their fleet and family, both Air Force and the Navy side, had never had a SkillBridge fellow. And so so essentially it's like, well, you know, it doesn't say in the instruction or the manual that you have to include your fleet and family service center, but I went and did just to kind of give back, like, hey, this is how I did it. When you teach a class, you may be wanting to, you know, you may want to use me as a vignette. So I included my fleet and family since they had never done it. I think they thought it was helpful.
So you said pretty much any company that or organization that isn't an ethic, ethically violating.
Right. So
you phrased it better.
Yeah. So but. I did. So in my instance, because of my background in logistics and supply contracting, I did go get a legal opinion by the command attorney, and which was cool that I did. There was no issue for me because I didn't meet any of the I didn't have any oversight or influence on any existing contracts with the government, nor would I have any influence or oversight on any contracts doing the internship. That's pretty much the big no-no. Is just you can't go represent a company that's peddling wares to the federal government while you're still on active duty. That's really the only prohibition that was in the ethics course. So on the Navy side, there was one ethics class that was online that you had to take, and basically it was very easy, but it pretty much just outlined, you know, you can't go work for a government contractor while you're still a GI.
Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
And the training, and then the company, there has to be like a job at the end of it, meaning you don't necessarily have to be hired, but, you know, an actual position description and a high probability of something happening at the end of the internship is that they say, now it's very subjective, but it just says a high probability of employment.
So you can't just be, there's like random labor. There has to be like kind of a rhyme or reason to work.
Yeah, like when I started at GSF, Stu told me he wanted to become me to be the director of marketing.
And there was
an opening coming up very soon. So
very interesting. I heard a different story, so we'll have to give him a little talking to later. So before we talk about what you actually did at your internships or fellowships, can we do a quick like main overarching steps? I know we talked about them, but like step one of what you did to get here, just like a quick recap for the people listening who might be interested in doing
it themselves. Step one is definitely find out the place that you want to do it and if they're receptive. There's no sense in asking the chain of command for permission to do it if you don't have the back office staff work done. So that's what I did. Like, so I knew Stu was receptive to me doing it at GSF. So that was actually part of my request. It was, I followed the instruction on the NAV admin. I request to do 180-day skill bridge internship starting on this day, ending on this day at Global Soft Foundation, a 503C corporation at this website. And so I basically had made the corporate arrangement first.
Okay. So step one, think about what might work for you as a company.
And it doesn't have to be one thing only. I could have been a month with Stu, and I could have done, 2 months with some other company and 2 months with another company. You can break it up however you
Well, it only takes 1 month to become a professional director of marketing, so that would have been all I needed anyway.
but what I like what Chuck said is, and what I tell folks is just remember to keep it really simple. It's just an agreement between the company or the potential employer, the service member, and the command. It's not a huge vetting process. So as long as you have a place to go every day where you're accounted for and you're actually doing work, you know what I mean?
Well, but the employer has to know that you're going to be doing your separation counseling, your VA appointments, medical appointments, all that admin stuff. So
exactly. They
shouldn't, you should also make it clear to them you won't be there 9 to 5 Monday through Friday.
And you're also not getting paid. So
it's a relationship. And so finding that company or that organization or that nonprofit that is receptive to it, and then that can find a certain amount of work for you to be able to do to learn. That's definitely step one.
All right, so step one, getting the company on board, and then step two is going up your chain of command.
Correct.
Basically.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And I'm assuming people in the military know how to do that.
No.
Yeah. No. Maybe not. Maybe not. Yeah.
No. So I remember.
I don't know if we should tell them or if that's obvious to them.
So I remember I went to my boss and he was like, I think it was one of those things where he had heard about it, had never done it. So it's like, well, and I thought about, and I went through like 1,000 ways, like, how do I want to do this? Do I want to do a memo? Do I want to like do all these complicated things? And I'm like, why am I going to do that? I'm just going to fill out a special request chit, which is like a little 1-page block form.
And that's what you did too?
That's what I did.
Yeah. Okay. Just to any sailor, airman, or a soldier, they fill out these things like, hey, I want to take classes at night for tuition assistance. They just fill out these shits and they get to go to college. And I was like, well, an internship is what I want to do. So I filled out a chit. How many days is what I want to do? And then I had a position description of what I'm going to do for those days. And then
did you write that or did the company?
The company did. The company
GSF?
Did. GSF did. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure I helped.
I did not get that. I didn't have that. So I didn't have that available.
It's not mandatory.
Well, you know, the second child is not as loved.
Yeah. So it's not mandatory, but as long as there was something, I had this chit and this position description, and I just put it in a blue folder and gave it to my boss. And then he called me into his office, he called me on the phone, and we just talked about it. And he said, sure, have fun. And that was it.
Okay. So it sounds like it's relatively simple to get started as long as you know it exists and you can do it.
Mm-hmm. I think if you do the work ahead of the time and just kind of grease the skids a little bit, if I'm putting an aviation term in there, just make it easy and conceptual as possible, then your chances for success are better.
I know that when Steve told me, you know, there's no program in Tampa, you know, you just kind of have to look at this paragraph, this number of the instruction, you'll see it says, you know, you figure out where you want to go. So I struggled with that, like trying to wrap my head around that it was such a liberal, you know, enforcement of like they were going to give me free time in the military.
Yeah.
But it's so just as a data point, I have a skill bridge on my LinkedIn profile. And I say more than five, less than 10 guys I have talked to total strangers through LinkedIn and they have the same thing. Like, so I could just find the place to do it. I'm like, bro, like see page 3, you know, paragraph 4, sentence 5. And it says it right there. And so they roll out. But yeah, so when I did it at my last command before I retired, I know of 3 or 4 other guys that have did it since, you know, since I did it at the same command. So it was well received by the chain of command where I was, and others have followed at the very same place. And then plus the folks that I've helped on SkillBridge. So I've seen maybe like 10 guys. I've helped about 10 other guys, and I've only, it hasn't even been a year since I did it. So
yeah, not even. So how many people do you think you've talked to about it, and how many people had actually heard of it before you told them?
I think everybody sees that same slide, like Steve mentioned, that's just the one line, you know, when you go through separation class. But I would say since then, I have talked to at least 20 to 30 people, then plus the guys that Stu has mentioned it to, and then push to me is probably another 5 or 10 guys. I pretty much, anytime I talk to somebody about retirement on transition, I'm telling them about SkillBridge because it's a huge thing to leverage.
Yeah, I think I'm about the same. I mean, I'm probably maybe to the 20-25 range.
It's a competition, so
we got to
score.
Maybe two. I think that have actually gone on and done it. I'm starting to get some pickups from LinkedIn. Mm. You know, when they see it, so I did that as well. And then with my move to DC, you know, I just see that there's lots of opportunity. Duke, what are you messing up with?
The dog is making noise. We're in a professional recording studio with the dog and
but I think Christmas decorations. But I think with the Pentagon and the amount of folks that are retiring or separating from that area, I just think, and there's so many companies, I just really think that it's a great opportunity. Because I just see it as such a win. Like, you know, if you've got a job or you need to be credentialed or there's a skill or some type of training or certification, I mean, that's 6 months that you can just knock that out. So from the day one when that first paycheck comes, that person is making money for you. And so huge opportunity, and I just, you know, push it.
What would you say are like the biggest things you guys got out of doing the program?
Well, for me, the program that I did with the foundation my internship was the job that I ended up being hired for. So from I think I did it 121 days, you know, it takes about 3 months for me just to learn all the back office, admin, logistics, battle rhythm, you know, how to use a CRM system. So when I got off at, when I got off active duty into terminal leave, I think, oh, I mean, you, Chelsea, you can tell me, or maybe I'm still not contributing. But I think I was contributing. So for me, you know, I remember started going to our, my first event as a SkillBridge intern. I bought a brand new suit, and nervous, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, here I am. Because every previous event I wore a uniform to. And so there was a whole different how I feel about it when you wake up in the day, when you're a veteran versus when you're in uniform attending one of these things. So that helped me, and I think it helped the foundation because I was actually, you know, working, not without consequence, but, you know, working with a little bit more, you know, left and right to make mistakes.
So you didn't have that awkward period of getting paid when you had no clue what you were doing?
Exactly.
I did that. We're going to take a quick break to talk about a founding partner of the Global Soft Foundation, Maxar Technologies. Maxar Technologies is a global leader in providing commercial satellites, space robotics, high-resolution Earth observation, and advanced geospatial intelligence solutions delivered through four of the leading commercial space technology brands: SSL, MDA, Digital Globe, and Radiant Solutions. Maxar's portfolio of best-in-class brands offers a full suite of end-to-end solution capabilities with deep domain expertise and space heritage. You can learn more about all four of their brands at Maxar.com. Let's get some more SkillBridge.
But I definitely saw, you know, any, you know, for me, it was just like being able to do my job. And, but, you know, I think Chuck's experience is different, though, because he was able to network more.
Yeah, so I kind of knew I had been around Colonel Braden at SOCOM, so I kind of knew the and I had some good friends that worked directly for him. So I knew, I mean, I knew the deal. I mean, I knew what I was what I was walking into, and really the power that Stu has in the social realm, and
it's just volume.
So
all that volume.
So yeah, for me, I mean, the first, well, first of all, I started off my the SkillBridge with eye surgery, back to back eye surgery. So I don't know if you remember, like,
forgot about that. Yeah,
I had already, I was like, hey, today's my first day, and I'm having surgery tomorrow. I'll see you in 2 weeks because I won't be able to see.
We call it your pirate
period. My pirate, yeah. So then I can only see out of one eye. Mm-hmm. So I was back-to-back eye. And this is why it's important to make sure your employer knows.
You almost got a wooden leg.
But the employer, yeah, you got to work, make sure the guy or the person that you're going to be skill bridging with understands what you have going on in your transition. So, but once I had regained, you know, once I had vision in both eyes again, I think the first event was the geospatial conference in Tampa, which was like a, you know, like the SOFIC of
GeoInt.
Yeah, the SOFIC for the Int people.
The Ints.
So that was really a really good experience, and probably was the build up and the execution of that was busy. You know, it was a busy couple weeks. So that was really good. I met some really good people, and then, you know, just the outpouring of that brotherhood to a fellow veteran or soon to be veteran that was transitioning, you know, it was just awesome. I really had no anxiety about retirement whatsoever. I know that's pretty unusual, but because of what I was exposed to at GSF, and because of the relationships that I, you know, that I made when I was in GSF. I don't mean the people that work at GSF, but the folks that I met through doing the fellowship was really what leveraged, my transition and made me really more comfortable and really, frankly, made me comfortable in a sales position right off the bat, which I, you know, a year, if you had told me I was going to be in a sales position, I would have said, no, that's, I'm not a sales guy. You know, I do supply and logistics, and so my first job out the gate is straight sales, and I really enjoy it, and I attribute that to knowing that I was going to like it because of the experience with SkillBridge.
Well, you also did extra preparation because you did Soft for Life seminars. I believe you did two, right? That's how we first met you, wasn't
it? I did. I had been in Tampa. I've been in Tampa for 7 years. So I went to any of the Soft for Lifes that I had that I could get to. So that was the last two, and then plenty of Sophics, and then a bunch of the Monday night. What do we call the Monday before Sophic?
The annual Tampa reception.
The annual reception. So I had been to a couple of GSF annual receptions. So I had definitely like an understanding of volume. And trying to work as many folks as possible and at least trying to have a... And I think what I garnered from GSF was, you know, trying to make the interaction more meaningful. Like, don't try to collect 100 business cards. Try to get 10 that you connect with the person on a little more personal level than just, you know, scooping up their name and email address.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, you looked like you had, like, some profound statement to make. I agree.
And I think the whole sales position thing is something that, you know, a year ago, retiring in September, I wouldn't think that that's something that I would be doing for mm-hmm. sure. And I guess, for instance, you know, just, you know, being in the Navy, doing one job, I mean, I separated, you know, from a position I wasn't around necessarily a lot of different businesses or contractors. So having exposure to like all the different types of companies, all the different types of roles and responsibilities are things that I got exposed to, even though it may not have been within the foundation because there's just four of us at the time. But of all the interactions that I did over that 121 days, I at least got an understanding of the functions, you know, that people actually do in business. And I got to see it. I think, you know, if I would have had a different understanding, I think, you know, the same thing would have popped out. And so that's when I, you know, go back to seeing that slide and I see that word internship. I mean, that's what I knew back when I was an undergrad. I mean, it's like, what? I get to learn and I get to figure out what I don't want to do. And I was like, that's like huge.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So what would you say was the like biggest shock or you know, new element when you first started doing the internship versus your military career?
I would say the language. The language, like the civilian spoken language. Some of the profanity maybe is pretty much absent in the civilian workforce and
at the GSO.
At least what you guys showed me, it was pretty gentleman and gentlewoman like.
Oh wow!
Yeah, but not the, you know, not the.
I'm impressed with
that. Is not the environment that a sailor spends, you know, 28 years in before they retire. So. So that was the first thing. Of course, the ability to choose what you're going to wear was also a solid Benny.
Did you like that?
Oh, I did.
See, I wish I had a uniform.
Oh.
It would be like, I want one of those jumpsuits that just zips.
I just didn't want to have to wear the hat, you know, wear a hat everywhere.
That's like, true. I can see that being a benefit. So, a Benny.
Benny.
Okay, so language, picking your own, the freedom to wear what you want.
Freedom to wear, yep, definitely. And then the whole idea, although I guess you could argue that it is present in the military, but, you know, the idea that the harder you work, the better you are at what you do, you know, the more you'll be compensated for it. I mean, that's definitely a concept that's not, you know, germane to military mm-hmm. service.
Like, you can get fired pretty easily.
Yeah, you
can get,
oh, the other way. You know, I was trying to be optimistic, but
you
certainly
could. That,
but I would have been the first.
It is on the table.
Skillbridge got to be fired.
I've been fired from military jobs.
Okay, but then they put you right in another
job. But
I still got a
paycheck.
Right.
I just had to do something different.
Yeah.
Not the same. So, Steve, what was your biggest shock when you first started doing real world stuff versus your military career?
The biggest shock. I don't know. I guess. I mean, I guess I wasn't shocked about it, but the real.
Yeah, shock might be a dramatic word,
yeah,
but
yeah,
you
yeah,
get what I'm
yeah,
saying.
Yeah, yeah, but the just the realization is the amount of effort is really. What you put into something is it's what you get out of it. And so, like, your career is a matter of how hard or smart you work. You know what I mean? So if you're putting in the times and making your numbers or your goals or whatever, that's, like, really, you know, it's really important. I think sometimes in the military, there are certain jobs where you have to do that. Like, if you're, you know, in a production billet where you have to produce so many aviators a year, I mean, there is a pressure to do that. But for the most part, if you just kind of show up and spend your time, I mean, the military wheel just kind of keeps turning. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And then you'll see. But, like, companies don't have the leisure of having a deep bench, you know, like, yeah.
Especially GSF.
Yeah, with all these people to choose from.
True.
And all of our jobs are so interconnected. Like, if I don't do something, then, like, Chelsea's waiting on something, and then she can't.
And mark, she's very nice.
And she
about
can't.
That.
And she can't mark things off her list. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But just beyond,
she's cranky.
Yeah, but just beyond being a good coworker, like, my effort translates to my ability to grow the foundation, to do more of the cooler things that we like to do, to throw, to have the funds to be able to throw effective events, to be able to hire more people so we don't have to wear so many different hats. You know what I mean? There's, you know, that pressure is a little bit different, where, you know, I didn't feel that pressure in the military.
Mm-hmm. Okay, last question. If you were talking to someone who, well, first of all, how far out from retirement should they be when they're doing this?
Well, according to instruction, you can't be more than 180 days from your separation.
But
date.
If they're actually, like,
if they're thinking about it,
getting with the company and starting to plan all that, and then they have to go through the chain of command and everything. Yeah.
I think it's probably at the minimum, probably, like, you know,
a year,
about three. Yeah, well, you should be thinking about, in my opinion, you should be thinking about your transition period at least 24 months in advance. Mm-hmm. To put together a solid internship, you need to give yourself probably a good 3 months, 6 months lead time prior to 180 days.
Okay. And two, to give your command, you know, enough time that to understand, hey, okay, so what is the day you're leaving, and who am I going to be able to shift or move into that position to cover down on what you were doing, you know?
Because you can't do your military job because you're appointed somewhere else, mm-hmm. right? And so your command either will be okay without you, or there has to be a plan, or your replacement mm-hmm. showed up early.
Okay.
So sometimes you probably won't have an opportunity to do the DOD, because the DOD skill bridge, it says you can. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say that you will, meaning because it's up to the command to have the ability to function without you. Mm-hmm. So,
but worst case, you could do it for like a month instead of 180 days,
correct.
Right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I did get kind of called back, but it was pre-planned and pre-arranged. So, like, when my relief showed up, I put my uniform back on for a week,
mm-hmm. yeah.
and went to do the turnover with him. And then I had previously, about 3 months before the skill bridge started, I guess, I had done a fairly high-level investigation, command investigation. And so I got called back into that, you know, to come talk to and turn over to the next to a colonel, you know. So it was no, and it was all kind of prearranged. It was no, you know, it wasn't a big deal. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did take the full 180 days. So when they asked me to come in and, you know, give back another couple of weeks, it was no issue. But I would say, at least back to your question, I'd say at least 6 months before your skill bridge starts is when you really should be finishing that up, so that folks know you're not going to be around, you know, so they can kind of absorb, digest the idea that you're mm-hmm. going to be gone for 180 days, which is not the norm, you know. So,
I mean, with anything cool, it takes time. If you're going to plan it, right? It's like, you know, you can throw it together, you know, just hop in the car and go. But if you put a little bit of planning, your experience is going to be better. So, because your first skill bridge, fellowship, you know, when you reach out to somebody, may fall through, right?
True, yeah.
And, you know, the idea is, if you can maximize that time, that is good. So, like, the planning just is, like, the key. And then you got to, you know, it might not work out, or they might not have enough work for you to do for the max amount of time. They may only have, like, 2 months worth of work for you to do. But so you got to market yourself a little bit, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Because they're not going to know, or have heard or ever had a skill bridge fellow. So you have to market yourself. And so the ability that you can be available, like, mm-hmm. hey, I'm your guy or I'm your gal. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, and you can trust that I'm going to be here and do good work, then people are more apt to help you. And that takes planning on your part to ensure, because you have to be in good standing to do it. You have to have a positive military career with a, you know, what they call it, a good conduct discharge coming your way. So you have to leave where you're from in a good position.
And you guys both manage that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think so. I guess you have to ask them.
I mean, you're there for a reason. So even for you to be even considered, you can't, I mean, you have to, not to say that you cannot ever have been in trouble, but you have to be leaving the military within a good, like you can't be
good
running
standing,
good yeah. standing. You can't be running from something into something else. You know what I'm saying?
Gotcha. Makes sense. Mm-hmm. So my real last question. So someone is a year out from their retirement and they're considering doing SkillBridge, but they're on the fence. What would be your like one statement of advice to them?
If you're on the fence, I would just call and ask a question. I mean, your fleet and family or whatever, whoever runs your transition program would be a good place to go to, right? I'm not guaranteeing good success. You know, you're probably, you know, 30-70 against getting solid advice. You know what I'm saying?
Just because it's so not
just because known. It's just not known. Not a lot of people do it. And then you'll hear something. But you can go to globalsoftfoundation.org, hit the Software Life program, and you'll see the SkillBridge portion. I think my name is there somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can give me a call, give Chuck a call, or write him an email.
Yeah, find Steve Jones or Chuck New on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely on LinkedIn. Yeah. You know, anybody can, please. As a matter of fact, just this week, a guy I used to serve with reached out to me about SkillBridge. I would say if you're on the fence about SkillBridge, you shouldn't be. Your decision, you should be struggling why not to do it.
There's no reason not to. I mean, if you're worried about like, oh, I have all this military work, and it's like, well, they're going to be fine without you.
Yeah. the machine you know, keeps turning. You know,
greater people have left the military.
Yeah. Yeah, we survived when Patton left.
Just do it all
right. No, Steve, they're number one.
Yeah. You know, the one thing we didn't talk about was the financial benefit of SkillBridge. There's one instance where it actually does result in money in your pocket. I don't know if you know this.
No, I would love to hear about this.
SkillBridge gives you the last 180 days of your time doing the internship. You're not, by instruction, entitled to take terminal leave and in your 10 days house hunting. That is all supposed to be incorporated into your 180-day SkillBridge internship. So what for me happened was because I retired the last possible month of the year, I retired on September 1st, I carried 60 days into October 1st, and then took 30 days during the year and then sold back my full 60 days, the max allowable of leave, when I retired, which I would not have been able to do, you know, otherwise. I guess I still could have, but, you know, I would have been looking to take that leave time.
Yeah, less likely to be able to have
because
that
your
time.
Terminal leave is actual leave. I mean, it's mm-hmm. the leave days that you're using. It's just the status that changes that makes it terminal leave. So, yeah, don't miss out on being able to sell, you know, to save your 60 days. In which case, then the planning for SkillBridge needs to start before the 12-month mark. Because if you're going to max out a 60-day end-of-career sell back of leave, you know, that last 12 months, you're going to have to start, you know, October 1st with a full 60 days to be able to do that.
Yeah, I kind of did that, the backwards math, too. And that's super important. So the timing is good because it could mean money for you. But another thing that we didn't talk about as well is that you're able to travel with your fellowship company. Like I said, they're not paying you, but you can, if there's a conference or a symposium or you're working in a sales team and they want you to go to the site, you can travel. Just ensure back at your command you fill out no cost TAD orders because that's covered because you're still active duty. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? And so it's a responsibility. That's why it's so important that you have that good relationship with your command because ultimately they're responsible for you. So the no cost TAD will cover you for that time, but you can travel, you can do things. You are part of their team while just making sure that the government knows that you're, that everything's fine and you're still alive.
Yeah. You don't want to die and not get your life insurance benefit while you're from active duty.
Makes sense. So don't pick a company that'll kill you, and do pick a company that'll take you on cool trips.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Planning. Anything that's cool, it's a little bit of planning. I mean,
you're right. Yeah. You're right.
You know what I mean?
Well, we kept the cool financial advice and travel advice for the end. So anyone who turned off early, which I can't see why they would have, missed out on the best parts.
What I like when you said is, like, if you're thinking, if you're on the fence about doing it, it's like, it's more like, you know, you should be, your question should be like, how do I make this happen?
Yeah.
Because there's no downside.
Yeah, I don't see any downsides to doing it, so.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for joining me today. Having you. You both have the best voices of the podcast so far. So
that was painless.
You got that? I know.
That was good. Thanks.
And nobody cussed at all in the whole thing, which is, from what I understand, is an unusual event.
We didn't. Sorry, I had to do it. All right. Thanks, guys.